This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
See Live Off the Record with Zhivago Lang is brought to you by Burger King, the Cleveland Clinic, Faith Center Ministries, Grand Bahama News, RF Bank and Trust, and Raw Star Assurance.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for being with us today. I am Carlos Mackey, sitting in for Zhivago Lang, who is unable to be here today. I want to thank Zhivago for the opportunity and the consideration to sit in for him. Thank you so much for being here with us today and listening in. Today is going to be an open line Thursday on this gray, breezy, beautiful Thursday. Yes, it's beautiful because every day that God gives us here in paradise, the place where God lives, is a beautiful day. And we want you to text in, call in, feel free to chime in. There are lots of things happening in the world around us, and this is an open line Thursday. So we have a number of things that are happening locally, internationally. Feel free, if there's something else that we don't cover that you want to bring up again, you can call in and text in. But obviously, we have some things happening here that are of major import. We have an immigration policy, I guess, enforcement exercise that is ongoing or going to be ongoing, apparently starting November 6th. The minister has stated that there will be demolition of shanty towns. It appears in a lot of instances that this is something that continues to come up, but the messaging around this now seems to be a bit different. There seems to be a level of determination around the demolition of shanty towns this time. So let's see exactly how that plays out. I want to hear from you and what your perspectives are. We obviously have the by-election that is upcoming in Grand Bahama due to the passing, unfortunately, of Minister, the Honorable E4, Bimini, and Bess M. So that is something that's interesting to see everything that has transpired since the passing of Mr. Wilchcombe. And then we also have, apparently, coming up very soon, the PLP convention. And some are saying that this is, for various reasons, going to be a more muted convention. Other people are saying, well, you know, hold on to your pants because there may be some last-minute surprises. So if you have any perspectives, obviously I'm not politically affiliated, but anybody that feels that they would like to make a comment in that regard, what they think is going to be the focus, what we should be looking out for at the PLP convention, how it potentially will impact the government and the way that it executes its agenda for the remainder of its term. Again, feel free to call in, text in. We'd love to hear your perspective. Locally, we also have to think about something that's very interesting. The Minister of Tourism, in one of his recent communications in the House of Assembly, indicated that tourism has grown, obviously, past our 2019 numbers, which were the highest numbers on record. So we are now in 2023, which, when it's all said and done, is going to be a reversal. We also have the Gaza war to talk about potentially. Sam Bankman-Fried's trial, FTX. And I don't know if anybody else has noticed, but there seems to be strikes everywhere. So we're going to open up the phone lines. I think we have a caller already. Again, this is Z-Live. I'm Carlos Mackey, sitting in for Zhivago Lang, and we're going to take our first caller. Caller, are you there?
Mr. Marie.
Good day, sir. How are you? Welcome to
Zila. I am fine. Listen, I want to talk about over-the-counter trading and see if we caught up in that and the fuel hedging. Because the way I understand it, airlines and cruise lines and trucking companies, they sort of try to reduce their exposure to volatility and by, you know, engaging in a fuel hedging platform.
That is typically correct.
Okay, now I want to find out now whether we did something and we had a call option in place. Or were we speculating, or were we in the futures market and we just say we can buy it at this price, and no matter what the price does, that's the price I can pay, and then we got stuck because the price dropped? Mm-hmm. Exactly what happened with that purchasing with our fuel hedging?
Let me say this, and I thank you for that question, caller. So there's a couple of things that I want to do very quickly, because you mentioned a term that not all of our audience may be familiar with. So you mentioned the term call. So for those of you that are not familiar, a call is a financial instrument that is what you call an option. So when you have a call option, it allows you to essentially call an asset away from somebody at a particular price. It is the opposite to something that's called a put, which is that you can put an asset to somebody at a particular price. So oftentimes in a hedging strategy, calls are used. Now, caller, I can't say exactly. I've not been privy to the specific mechanics of BPL's hedging strategy that was used previously, because you then also mentioned another item, which is a future. So a future is a contract, different from a call or a put. A future is an actual contract to purchase an item at a particular price in some time to come. That can be as little as, in most times, 30 days, 60 days, 120 days, 360 days, and you can have what they would call rolling futures, essentially, right? Where you roll over certain futures at elevated or lessened prices based on what you think are happening in the market. I can't tell you what happened with BPL, but as a matter of principle, do I think that as a national provider that BPL is, that they should have a hedging program in place? Absolutely. What most likely has happened in BPL situation is that whatever they had, whether it was futures or whether they had call options, there was an expiration, because all of these things have what you would call expiration dates. And whoever was supposed to or should have made sure that there was a rollover or renewal may not have done that. That's the only thing that I can think of. And unfortunately, with BPL being a national provider, almost everybody locally who is not able to purchase their own solar system or some other kind of alternative energy, all of us are feeling it. I can tell you that because I paid my light bill yesterday and it is literally double what it was 2 years ago, right? That's the unfortunate thing. But my supposition is most likely whether it was a future or whether it was a call option, it probably expired and it was not renewed on time.
Man, that's stupid. Listen, are you familiar with over-the-counter trading then?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, I as a retail trader, here's what happens here. You are not allowed to, because, you know, the market would close Friday at 6 o'clock if you're a retail trader, and then not till Sunday at 6. During that weekend period, you have the institutional high rollers trading futures.
Indeed.
Okay, gold. Now, so here's the trick. This is the strategy that you maybe want to consider trying if you're trading futures. The market is going to close for you on the retail platform, mm-hmm. and the price is going to move over the weekend. So what I do is I put in my stop, my orders. If the market goes up, when it opens, I catch it. If it comes down, I catch it. So, you know, you can put in your orders just before the market closes Friday at 5 so that you'll be able to catch the jump up or the jump down. And sometimes that's very profitable because those high rollers over the weekend actually move the market.
Absolutely. But I would say this to you, caller. I think when we think about BPL's fuel situation, we have to be prepared to dig even deeper than that, because what you're talking about is a strategy that assumes that there aren't more layers, right, than
right.
what we are exposed to. We don't know whether or not the expiration was deliberately allowed because there's some other arrangement in place that, though it's not beneficial to the aid and people, may be beneficial to some other third party.
Mine's
right?
going down a dark road just down.
No, but see, these are the things that we have to take into account. Now, again, we're speaking in a vacuum, right? Because you and I don't have that information in front of us. But when we think about it, to me, it is nonsensical, as you indicated, for us to allow what was an effective hedge strategy to expire without an appropriate replacement. It just seems nonsensical to me. Because the thing is, right, and you, as a retail trader, a futures contract, you can buy option contracts. And even if it is such that you end up having an option that expires because it didn't make sense to strike at the particular price. Striking is essentially making it effective, for those of you that haven't heard that term before. Even if the strike price is such that it didn't make sense, it is better to lose a lot of times when you're talking about buying the amount of fuel that would be used for BPL than to have a situation where the fuel cost, as it now has, represents more than 50%. The fuel surcharge represents more than 50% of people's bill. I would rather BPL say that we lost maybe $1 million on options that were out of the money for that term, means that it didn't make sense to execute the option. I would rather them say that than for the Bahamian people to be in aggregate suffering to the tune of tens and millions of dollars. That, to me, that does not make sense.
So this is really not just about limit orders.
No, it's and this is what I'm saying. It's more than about a financial strategy. We have to dig deeper and say, okay, why is it such that the hedging of fuel is not important? Because to me, you have to have a reason why something that's working effectively, you abandon. I can't believe that there would be negligence to the point where people just say, I have something that works, I know how it works, but I'm going to abandon it. There has to be some kind of questioning around why would you abandon something that's working. So in my mind, that probably means that there is something else at play that we are not privy to. Interesting to know what that is.
Thank you for taking my call, sir.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, caller. And another thing that the caller and I didn't get into is we have to really consider how BPL works, because one of the things that we may need to think about is BPL should most likely continue to maintain a transmission monopoly. I don't have any issue with that. Government monopolies, in certain cases, actually are the most sensible thing. You even have them in the United States. You have the Tennessee Valley Authority that is essentially a power monopoly for a large section of the United States. What we need to think about is, does BEC by and large need to be what we would call a monopolistic producer? They appear to be moving away from that with the so-called intent to enter into public-private partnerships. I think we can be more aggressive in that regard and be more innovative, but that's the direction that we need to go. Where BPL is really focused on transmission, but we allow private producers and innovators to really focus on production, lowering costs and increasing reliability and capacity. I think we have another call on the line. Call, are you there?
Well, good afternoon.
Good day, sir. How are you?
I'm trying to struggle with understanding why over a decade ago, John Boswick and myself, who were panelists in an energy forum put on by the Chamber of Commerce at one of the major hotels, and the suggestion was made for the quick, immediate relief of the suffering of the Bahamian people at that time, to do what many countries in the region have done, a floating liquid natural gas clean fuel, because it is ridiculous to be arguing over why we can't burn that non-clean fuel. I have to watch my words.
Mm-hmm.
You're fighting over burning a fuel that is cleaner or not cleaner than what we're burning. See, this is the heavy fuel. What is it exactly? Why is it that we, from that time, which is over a decade ago, did not bring in a 400 megawatt, that's more energy than we need, floating power barge, that at that time would have cut the kilowatt hour cost drastically? I'm not going to tell you how much per kilowatt hour in cents, because then you fixate on that. Floating barge could be here within, what, 1 to 3 months operational? I'm asking. And could it cut our light bill in half? I'm asking. That's the quick fix. The long term is we should have, as you said, had the government in charge of the grid, upgrading it to a smart grid, hopefully. But each home being a generator, a simple solar system on each rooftop that could support it, could greatly reduce our energy use in the day. Leslie Miller, who is the chairman of BPL, not me, or you, said that we use one-third of our light bill, one-third of our light bill comes from heating water. Now, if he is correct, and I don't think he is a liar, Leslie Miller was telling you and me and us that if we solarized all the water heating in this country, that creates jobs, by the way, the maintenance on these, we could have made the generators that we have currently one-third too big.
Mm.
You know what I'm telling you? If we burn, if we have 300 megawatts worth of power, we would have only needed 200 megawatts. That means we would have had an extra 100 megawatts and no blackouts. And your light bill would have gone down by a third. If it was 300, it'd be 200. Where is our think tank on energy security? And I've been talking about this for 30 years, but I'm not just a talker. I've implemented all these things. That's probably the difference. You got people talking it instead of the people living it. Have you ever heard of high efficiency air conditioning? The SEER rating.
Yes.
What do you think is the highest SEER rating? 10 SEER, 20 SEER? What have you heard? 26 SEER?
I've heard of 25, 26 SEER.
I am running 42 SEER air conditioning exclusively. That means one of my air conditions burns the same as your two ceiling fans.
Mm.
Now, do you know how much electricity you would save? See, if we were to have environments that really cared, the ministry, we'd be teaching business, and I've spoken to Fenton Newmore and even go beyond him about this. And now the unit costs a lot of money. But if we were to say, if you wanted to upgrade your system today, no VAT, no duty, no customs entry fee, we want you to get this efficient appliance. But we are joking with energy security. And you know when it comes to head? Don't worry about that food price and that light bill today. Because gas is $6.20. No American could afford $6.20 per gallon of gas. That's how rich we are. But what happens if the Middle East turns into turmoil like in the 1970s and gas goes to $10, $20 a gallon? What is your plan? Because your light bill will go up at the same rate and your food. And so we're not having the discussion on these things. Perfect distractions. What about energy security? I can leave you on this one, but you invite John Bostwick on the show and he'll tell you what he told you over a decade ago. And I believe it was 12 cents a kilowatt hour back then. And it comes with the generator, it comes with the fuel, and it comes with all the technicians, and it floats in here and plugs in, and you're up and running, lickety-split. Folks, do we want to give relief to our people, or we want to punish them?
Indeed.
Anyway, go on. 50 years, and this is where we at. Have a good one.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I believe that is Mr. Weatherford, Graham Weatherford. So, Mr. Weatherford, you and I are probably aligned. I'm somebody that believes that the all our pursuit of alternative energy, or what we would call renewable energy, as an immediate conversion, I don't think that that's the right answer. That's my personal perspective. I do agree that there needs to be a transition, and whether that is determined to be a 15-year period, 20-year period, I am in full agreement that a floating barge generation facility that uses clean LNG. It is not propane, but it's similar to propane. Propane and natural gas. Propane is a bit heavier than natural gas, but again, they are both, for all intents and purposes, much, much cleaner than the fuel that we burn right now, diesel, bunker-C. I don't know if we're still burning bunker-C, but diesel even is nowhere close to being as clean as propane and natural gas. So I don't have any objection to that. One of the things that I've proposed is that we would have effectively a national program, national campaign around what we would call solarization. I would certain persons that are, I guess, that were at the time higher up in the energy infrastructure of the country, as far as the ministry and BPL, that my plan didn't make sense. But effectively, what I propose is that over the course of a 10-year period, that we would effectively attempt to convert somewhere around 50,000 dwellings into fully solarized dwellings over the course of 10 years. And if we think about it from the perspective of, even if you say that it is a cost of $8,000 per unit, you're talking about an annual cost of about $40 million. But I don't think that we have enough foresight sometimes to really think about what that means. 5,000 homes that are going to need what we would call, in some cases, electrical upgrades. In other cases, it may also require roof upgrades. There, in my mind, would be a mini, we would call it construction and allied construction services boom, right? And it would be a sustainable boom because as a part of the changes that we should be pushing through with the building code, it should be that every new home would be have a particular, what we would call, level of solarization that is required in order for you to get a building permit. So I don't know that there is an appetite, unfortunately, Mr. Weatherford, because I do remember your advocacy. It's something that I have advocated for publicly and privately, and I have been told in public and private forums that that the grid can't handle it. If we say that the grid can't handle it, how do we think and how do we plan for the grid being able to handle it? Because if you think about 5,000 homes needing some kind of upgrade or being a part of this program, even if they were brand new homes that needed no upgrades, the amount of jobs, you essentially would have created a brand new industry for Bahamian tradespersons to really sink their teeth into. We would be able to hopefully partner and utilize the BTBI in order for us to have a certification program so that our people can be upskilled, not just on the installation, but also on the management and the understanding of the entire solar energy ecosystem, from the chemistry behind it, right down to the technical aspects of it in terms of how the wafer technology is made, whether or not as a part of this program, BPL, again, no longer as a what we would call a monopolistic producer, whether BPL should consider investment in a solar wafer line. These are the kind of conversations, and when I say a solar wafer line, I'm talking about an actual plant that uses our high purity sun here in the Bahamas to, and now some people will say, oh, it doesn't make sense. But again, if we go through the economic exercise and we determine that, that's fine. But at least let's have the conversation. Let's actually do the work. One of the problems that we have is that everyone doesn't want to do the work. No one wants to think. No one wants to dream. No one wants to imagine because that requires us to do work. Sometimes you get to an answer that says it doesn't make sense to do it. But at least we've gone through the exercise. And every mental exercise that requires to work and to innovate has few benefit. I 100% believe that. So I do think that we can do better. I hope we do better. But unfortunately, Mr. Weatherford, I, like you, have also gotten the kind of response that you've gotten. I think we have a couple of callers on the line. Let's take the first caller. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you, sir?
Doing excellent. How are you? Welcome to Z-Line.
I'm okay. I just want to make a point on the shanty town.
Stay right again for me, the shanty town.
I want to get my input on it.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
I just feel like what's happening in reference to that it needs to take place.
Okay.
And I feel like if it don't happen now, I don't think it will ever happen.
Mm.
It may sound and it may, looking from the outside, it may look so inhumorous, right? But I think these persons would have had sufficient time. I think every person, I believe, in those shady towns has some family, friend, or someone who's going to stand by and who's going to be standing in the gap for them as far as assistance. Mm-hmm. Ones who don't have nobody, don't know nobody, they're the ones who just joined the shady town, and they're the ones who probably need to be sent back home.
Okay.
The government, if they don't bite this bullet and do what they need to do now, there may never be another. Because this matter then went to court at least 3 times.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay?
Yes, ma'am.
And I feel like we need to send a message and a strong message. And don't just start and stop. Just do it all one time and forget it. Because guess what? Look at us, who went through Doreen. A lot of persons still doesn't have home to live in. Still struggling and still having a problem. So if, you know, whatever plans they have, let's hope they have something in place. But let's not put this off. You see they put this off this time, you could forget it. I don't think it will ever happen again. That's
just so much, caller. We have another caller, but let me say this quickly. I 100% in support of the demolition of shanty towns, not because I have anything against any particular group of people from any diaspora, but because they represent an affront to our law and order on a couple of different levels. One, it is egregious for us to allow persons to squat, especially persons that are by and large illegal, when Bahamians who squat on land are not allowed to have what we would call squatters' rights. In many instances, they are required to move off of the land, as they should be, because stealing land, whether or not it is done by somebody that is local or foreign, is something that is disreputable, and it should be something that we deal with. And the Movable Properties Act, is, as well as the Quieting Titles Act, is something that we need to deal with. But on another thing that we have to really be concerned about is the fact that there are oftentimes health risks associated with shanty towns because of the inferior or non-existent what we would call infrastructure, both for energy and for water and sewerage. And on a third point, shanty towns in our society and around the world have proven, unfortunately, to be havens of crime, not just simply crime against the outside community, but also crime against persons within those communities. A lot of crimes happen in those communities that go unreported. A lot of people are taken advantage of in those communities, and we have to make sure that the law is observed everywhere, or it's behind the gates of the wealthy, rich, and famous. We have to do a better job of making sure that everybody follows the law. Again, I'm for the demolition of shanty towns, but it cannot simply be that. We need comprehensive immigration reform that deals with demolition, deportation, also naturalization. We have a lot of questions on naturalization. All kind of people saying that they are Bahamians now, paper Bahamians. We need to deal with that. And yes, I use the term not pejoratively, but I'm very serious about the fact that we have to have a real conversation about how precious we consider our Bahamian status to be, because it appears as though we're doing everything in our power at the policy level to give it to any and everybody, whether or not that makes sense. We have another caller on. I'll stop there. Caller, are you there?
Good afternoon, Carlos Mackey.
Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I mean, Graham makes me laugh because 45 Sear air conditioner costs about $2,000. The higher efficiency, the more it's going to cost. Few Bahamians could afford that. The real one,
I think, I'd say this, though, caller. I think what Graham is trying to get at is there are different ways that you're going to pay, right? So potentially, and one of the things that the first caller mentioned was this whole idea of collective sourcing, so and futures buying, right? So potentially, we may need to do a national program where we say, you know what, over the course, again, similar to what I propose around solar panels, we may have to say over the course of 5 years, we are going to do a program where everybody in the country who has air conditioning in their house, the government of Bahamas is going to buy 20,000 units. 20,000 of these super
Shell, was supposed to come and give us, buy the LNG for us and just charge it for the power. All I heard that, all of a sudden I hear the name Wazula come in the picture. And they would have make these generators that run on three different fuels. That would double sold to us. Right?
So,
$96 million. So now, this surcharge pays for what? Because that money got to be paid. Now, Kobe Davis said that costs $130 million at the end of the day. Plus, we paid them to manage it and service it.
What?
So, we would be at a better deal. The hedging is only 30% of the bad deal. These Wazula engines got to be paid for.
Right.
So, that's the other cause of high fuel, too. These Wazula engines...
But remember, the worst part about the Wazula engines weren't that we purchased them. We were only renting them.
Some of them,
So here's... Again, I go back to my point with the first column. We are not privy to all of the decision-making and details, unfortunately. Right? We don't have properly... effective Freedom of Information Act, right? Such that BPL, as a government corporation, these major decisions, the deliberations that go into it, not necessarily the details, but the what we would call the factual or counterfactual reasoning behind how you get to a particular place, right? In terms of why somebody makes a decision to go with Wazula over a Shell Energy plan. There's never been an accounting or what I would call a promulgation of the economics behind how a decision is made to be. I've never seen one.
Go ahead. What people fail to forget, we bought a GE turbine engine, but it didn't blow. How is that working? I would be to find out how is that GE engine we bought for $30 million? Was that good? Is it still working good? That we need to find out. We need to buy more GE engines compared to the Wazula.
But
the GE engine that we bought and put it in our fuel plant.
Let me ask you this caller question. Is there some place on BPL's website where you can go and see an equipment listing?
Nope.
Is there some place on BPL's website where you can go and see the amount of vehicles that they have in use, or even if not an amount of vehicles, the amount on their balance sheet for vehicles? Have we seen a BPL balance sheet in the last 10 years?
I would
imagine that BPL is providing a, what do you call, an annual report, but I have not seen a table in Parliament, or I have not seen it published for the general public. I don't know if you are.
I am glad that they got out that mall of paying that high rent in the mall, because in the States, FPNL don't rent no space. You have to go to check out the store.
Yeah, but Paul, I'm asking you, though. Let me ask you this question.
Cutting
the rent in the mall. Do we know what BPL's total rent expense is for rented spaces?
But they didn't even rent no space no more.
No, but my last point
customers,
is...
Everybody go to check out the store to pay their bill. And some people charge you a dollar. Some people just...
But my point is, BPL still potentially, what I'm getting at is, we don't know what that cost represented as a proportion of BPL's overall expense levels, right?
You and I
are saying that the rent may have been exorbitant. I don't know that because I don't have anything to compare it to, both historically and contextually. I don't know the context of that. What I'm getting at is, there are things that make a lot of sense. My largest problem out of all of this is we don't have information on something that's being funded by public tax money, by monies that you and I as taxpayers are funding. You mentioned the GE engine. You mentioned the Wazula engines. My fundamental issue is you and I are only speculating based on what we were able to glean from the daily newspapers or a report and making a personal tabulation. There is no place where we could actually go. For instance, I could actually go on certain power producers' websites out of the U.S., like Southern Power and FPL, right? And they will actually tell you, at this facility, we have this amount of kilowatts that are produced. We utilize these kinds of engines. We have this amount of solar panels that we are using in Florida producing power. We don't have that level of granularity that allows us, especially as taxpayers, to be able to make what I would call informed considerations about BPM. So you and I could get upset, but the real thing we need to get upset about is the fact that we don't even have information. We can't even talk, in my view. You and I are having a conceptual conversation, but we're not having a factual conversation because we actually don't know what happened. That, to me, is the bigger problem.
Carlos. Hello. Carlos.
Go ahead, Carla.
Now, this is an international fact. Every
right.
big contract comes with a 5% finder's fee. Now, I'm just speculating, I'm just saying, tongue in cheek, who got the finder's fee?
That's why I said many mention the fact that the futures contract or option was allowed to expire.
Mm-hmm.
You notice I said, we have to look and see at who all is involved, all of the third parties that are involved, because if you change from one arrangement to another arrangement, that doesn't benefit the Bahamian people. Who actually got the benefit?
Even some parts of natural gas, that's futures too. Futures, that went up, and FPNF bill had to go up too, because that went up on the stock market.
Well,
we need to run it better, and we need to be more open.
When you roll a future, the reality is, yes, when you roll a future, there are times when you're going to have, you're not necessarily going to be able to get the same deal that you got previously. And again, that talks about being mindful and watchful of the situations that are around you. This situation that we're dealing with right now with energy markets is something that you may not have considered it explicitly a year ago, because nobody knew that, unfortunately, you'd have had the attack that Hamas made on Israel, and there would be the further implications that would have been made, right? But the answer overall was that historically, we know that oil was trading at a lower place, and some of the messaging that was coming even from places like Saudi Arabia was that they were not interested in doing effectively the United States and those of us that are oil consumer, high-income countries, any favors. And even with the whole situation with Russia and Ukraine, the Russians had simply said that they're not prepared to do any favors for Europe because Europe is essentially supporting Ukraine. So for me, if you have a entity like BPL, that factor, which is fuel, and to Graham's point, I don't know that it's the right type of fuel that we're using, but let's just stick with that for now, with that premise. When we think about it from this perspective, we have to be smarter. We know what we're up against. It cannot be that we are prepared to do things that harm the public, knowing that we have the capacity to do things that benefit them. Or maybe we are, because that's apparently what's happened. Maybe we are prepared to do that, because there doesn't appear, based on what we can see, that there's any accountability. Thank you, caller. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Again, this is Z Live. This is Carlos Mackey. And we've definitely gone to a place that I wasn't expecting with regard to fuel bills. But obviously, people are very upset. Like I said, I paid a fuel bill yesterday for my BPL bill, and it was literally twice as high as I paid 18 to 24 months before. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to be back here on Z Live. Carlos Mackey sitting in for Chicago Line. This is an open line Thursday. Feel free to call and text in again. Whatever is on your mind, we can have a conversation about it, because this is our country. We need to be thoughtful. We need to be discreet in the way that we think. We need to be logical and clear, but we also have to be honest and respectful. So let's be respectful, let's be clear-minded, but let's have a real firm conversation about what's happening in our country and the world around us. We'll be back right after this break. Together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road. And I just can't keep
the car.
I ain't marched the car. It's the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull up the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today, or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
It's World Investor Month, and we're demystifying the world of investments. Let's talk about risk. Imagine investing as a tightrope walk. On one side, you risk falling. On the other, you have potential rewards. All investments carry some level of risk, even the safest ones. Understanding these risks is crucial to making smart investment decisions. This message is brought to you by RF Bank and Trust and the Bahamas International Securities Exchange. Learn more by following us on social media.
If you're looking for a burger that is 100% flame-grilled beef and comes with all the fixings you love, nothing beats the classic Whopper from BK. So, how do you make this classic flame-grilled Whopper from Burger King better? You double it! With double the cheese and double the bacon, this sandwich can fill any appetite. Introducing the Double Whopper from Burger King that is so big and delicious that the only way to make it better is to make it a combo. Try the new Double Whopper at Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
Struggling to repay your loan? Let us help you get back on track with payment terms that suits your financial situation and improve your credit score and credit report with the Bahamas Credit Bureau. Inquire about our restructured loans today. Call us at 356-7764.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
We're here back on Z Live. This is Carlos Mackey sitting in for Shivago Lang. I am very encouraged by the conversations that we had before the break, because some of the comments that were made, in particular about energy, I think are things that we need to be thinking about, because simply being upset about the fact that our bill is higher and not directing that upsetness, not directing that rage at persons or individuals, but at solutions is the right way to go. So I'm very happy that we're having constructive conversations. Even though the callers were obviously perturbed that we're in the situation that we're in, we definitely need to make sure, to continue, that we have constructive conversations. There was also a conversation around immigration. And again, I support demolition of shanty towns, not because I want to disenfranchise anyone, though in many respects, I think it is deconstruction or demolition as disenfranchisement. I think that this idea of what I would call universal human rights in the way that it's being applied in a lot of respects is disrespectful and abrogating of our sovereignty as a nation. I personally don't consider myself, with all due respect, not a global citizen. That is garbage, absolute trite. I'm a citizen of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. When I go to the airport, I present a Bahamian passport to get wherever it is I'm going. Been to Europe, been different places in Latin America, been obviously across to North America. Hopefully I'll have the opportunity very soon to go to Asia and Africa. But the fact remains, when I go, I will be going as a citizen of the Bahamas. So as a citizen of the Bahamas, my priority first and foremost to make sure that the Bahamas is a place that is well kept and that our laws are abided by, because I want this to be a place that I can pass on to my heirs and beneficiaries, i.e. my children, my grandchildren, and if God give me grace to live long enough to be able to see my great-grandchildren, should Christ not come. So my answer is, this idea in, as they want to say, international law and human rights and UN conventions, again, you've got the smallest violin in the world playing. I'm not here for it. We have to get to a place where we respect the sovereignty of the Bahamas. And I'm not talking, again, about disrespecting humans and harming them. But we are a nation of laws, not a nation of men. And we have to be very careful that in this goal of talking about civil rights and human rights and all of this stuff that can get very misconstrued, that we don't deal with the fact of law and order. I tell people, if you're looking for grace and mercy, that is a religious matter. When you talk about law and order, that is the purview of government. So government needs to be concerned with law and order. I am very much a proponent of comprehensive immigration reform. We need immigration reform that deals with not just what a lot of people consider to be illegal immigration at the lower end of the economic spectrum. We need to deal with the fact that there are things that are happening in the upper echelons of the economic spectrum with regard to even foreign executives that come here and flout our immigration laws, and they get to work and they find workarounds in the system. So we need to deal with immigration reform, and we cannot always do things from a defensive posture, because the reality is, in our society and in our economy, there are things for which we will need foreign assistance. That's a fact. We only have certain numbers of certain skill sets in our native population. If that is the case, we have to be prepared to deal with the reality that we are going to have help. So when we have help, we have to have, or when we are seeking to have help, we have to have very discreet, deliberate policy that allows us, again, not to be defensive, but to be proactive around how we integrate these folk into our country, under what terms we integrate them into our country. We allow them to become a part of our society, because that's something that I think we are missing in this whole conversation. We have a lot of passports that are being issued, a lot of people that are wanting to make claims to either residency rights or citizens, in a lot of respects, having comprehensive conversations around how are we properly integrating people into our country. That's something that we have to do a better job of. And that's why I say, yes, demolition is good. Deportation, as long as we do not in any way seek to harm, or we would call it not allow people to have due process. Because again, if we are a nation of law and order, due process is important. As the one of the callers said, we've been to court over the shantytown thing a number of times. So as far as I'm concerned, the court stage is passed. So that part of it is due process. Due process has been followed as much as possible. When it comes to deportations, due process must also be followed. But it should happen in the cases where, after due process, it is found that persons have no real claim or no real privilege that should be extended to them. Because I can tell you, it's not a right. You can make claims and you can have privileges granted. But this idea that people have a right to be residents and people have a right to be naturalized, and except under certain circumstances of what we would call heritage and lineage, I think we have to get that out of our head. Again, that's my perspective. And that is because, above all else, God made me man and he made me man. And that's my worldview. people would say that's chauvinistic, that's nationalistic. You could use all the istics you want to use to describe me. As long as you call me Bahamian and you call me and you recognize that my perspective is that from a Judeo-Christian biblical worldview, I'm fine with that. Because that's where I'm coming from. You don't have to question where I'm coming from. My prism for life is very clear. I believe in Jehovah. I'm 100% committed to being Bahamian. After that, however you want to deal with me, that's fine. But once you understand those two principal ideas about me, or those two principles about me, because they're not ideas, they are principles. Those are two things that by God's grace will never change, because I cannot be anything except for what he made me, and I bless him that he's made me behave. All right? So, again, let's be very clear and deliberate. We have a lot of things to discuss. We have the 3 p.m. news break coming up, but again, comprehensive immigration reform. Let's not be emotional. Yes, shantytown, deportation, all of that plays a part. So does law and order. So does due process. But again, we have to be deliberate about what we want for this country across everything, whether it's immigration, whether that's energy, whether it's crime, whether that's economics. Let's think, how do we make the Bahamas better? Not just for now, but for the future. We'll take the 3 o'clock news break and be back on C-Live right after this.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand.
Hi, thank you so much for being on with us today. This is Thomas Mackey sitting in for Shivago Lang. We want to thank Shivago for this opportunity to be here with you all on this gray, windy, beautiful Thursday here in the Bahamas, the country where God lives. Thank you all so much. Today, again, is an open live Thursday. We've had a bit of a discussion about BPL and energy. We've had some discussion around immigration. We have some more things that we can talk about. If you want to continue to talk about those items, that's fine. But I think it's interesting for us to have a little bit of consideration with regard to what is happening in our economy. One of the things that I found interesting was that tourism is literally on track. Well, I can't even say on track. We are coming to the end of what is going to be a record-breaking year. The reason why we can say that is because the numbers as of September 2023 had already exceeded our record year for arrival 19. So whatever the number is for this year, it's going to be a new record. Question I think that we have to ask ourselves around tourism and what's happening is multiple. One, we have to think around what can we do? What do we need to be thinking about as a destination group? Because I don't consider Bahamas to be a single destination, right? We are an archipelago with, by my count, and there are other counts, but the count that I use, we have essentially 12 major island groupings. So we have 12 different island groupings, and each of those, in my mind, is a destination unto itself, if properly packaged and presented. And I think that folk like Kerry Fountain at the Out Island Promotion Board are doing their darndest to try to make sure that our family islands are presented as positively and as spectacularly as possible. We want to thank the minister and the team, the PS, all of those folk that work at the ministry, because we know that tourism is a significant driver for our economy. It is the most important driver. But I want us, as the Bahamian people, what do we think do we need to do? One, to make sure that the growth in numbers continues, but also we need to ask ourselves, what do we need to do to make sure that there is more value that's gotten from the growth in numbers? I think one of the challenges that a lot of people have here is that we don't necessarily feel it in terms of there being a significant boost to the economy. And the reality is there's probably an inflation impact that cannot be denied, because inflation continues to have what we would call significant effects on people's pockets. But there's probably also something to be said around the level of ownership of the large touristic attractions. Even the large tour attractions, if we want to be honest, are not owned. So we already know the hotels aren't primarily owned by Bahamians, but a lot of the large tour attractions aren't owned by Bahamians. So there's probably an ownership element to that that we have to consider. And I'm not talking about trying to run foreigners that have invested. We appreciate their investment. So if we're not talking about running people, which I think is the wrong idea, how do we as Bahamians begin to innovate more in tourism so that we have a broader, multifaceted, really attractive, and always refreshing product to offer to the world? Because that's fit us when we begin to think in that way around our country's number one industry. And again, the folk in the ministry are doing a great job. But as they used to say when I was in school, that tourism is everybody's business. So it simply can't be that we look at the Ministry of Tourism and we want to judge them completely by whether or not there's a drop or an increase in numbers. Yes, they have a large part to play, but the reality still is that we all have a part to play. All of us can provide something. All of us can be thoughtful. All of us can invest. So even if you're not prepared to do something directly, there are people around you who are creative, who are entrepreneurial, who have certain skills. How do we invest in each other? Let's start to think about structures. Let's try to have a different kind of paradigm around how we grow the tourism industry. One of the other things that I find interesting is, and it's obviously a different kind of consideration, is I'm really taken aback by locally and internationally what appears to be a very active period of discontent and disruption by organized labor, right? Everywhere you listen, there appears to be strikes. We have strikes here, we have strikes in the U.S. And I, for one, somebody that, and full disclaimer, I'm a business owner. I believe in private capital. I believe in capitalism. It is the best of imperfect economic systems. Socialism and communism are fool's dreams, because the only people that actually do well in those systems are the ones that are at the top, or who help to facilitate the orders of those at the top. If you've been to Cuba or some of these other places that are communist socialist countries, I can tell you there's a reason why all of them trying to get out. Right? And I'm not bashing Cuba. Cuba is a beautiful place. But as somebody that has grown up with the freedoms that we have here in the Bahamas, I can tell you I would not trade it. I would not trade it. I wouldn't trade it even for being wealthy in Cuba. I would rather be here in the Bahamas. So when we think about the realities of our capitalist economy and the impact that has on our democratic society, I find it fascinating that places like the Bahamas and the United States, places in Europe, are seeing so much organized labor strikes, I often try to figure out, like, what is really driving a lot of this? Because one of the things that I don't see happening in a lot of these discussions, particularly here locally, people talk about for long periods of time, and I can respect that. But one of the things that doesn't get spoken about a lot is, how do we measure productivity? And are we actually seeing increases in productivity? Because I, for one, as an employer, think that you cannot necessarily just marry what you would call large raises with nothing on the other side. There has to be value, right? I'm not a lawyer, but I think every contract or every time that there's an exchange, you're supposed to have value coming from both sides. I don't know that in a lot of these conversations by organized labor, there's a consideration of what value is, or what increase in value is the expectation or the requirement going to be for these large salary increases that people are demanding. I listened to the United Auto Workers Union president or some senior executive talk about what they were asking from Ford Motors and from General Motors and from Stellantis, who is the maker of the Chrysler, Dodge, and Jeep brands. And I found it fascinatingly disheartening that you had a situation where this guy literally talked about the fact that we want more because they make a certain amount of profits. No real conversation around how they were tying their requests, their productivity or projected increases in productivity. They simply wanted to say, we want more because you have it, and we want to change the balance of who has what in this relationship. That to me is dangerous. I think that's extremely dangerous. I respect organized labor. There is importance around having advocates to make sure that the rights of workers aren't trampled on. But this idea that the economic equation must overvalue labor over and above investments in capital, investments in management skill, investments in innovation, that to me is a dangerous thing. That's a dangerous line of thinking. Simply because you show up, not necessarily are you productive, but you meet the minimum requirements, you're asking for the maximum return. That's a dangerous line of thinking. Dangerous line of thinking. I think we have a call on the line. Is that correct? No, I think we lost that call. Again, this is Z Live. This is Carlos Mackey sitting in for Chivago Line. And we're having an open line, a conversation on this Thursday. Whatever it is that you want to discuss, we are able to discuss that today. We have about a half an hour left. So again, there's something that's burning, that's pressing. Feel free. Let's have a chat around the things that you find to be important in this day and time, because a lot is definitely going on, and we want to make sure that we do our very best to have productions in our society. We have a lot of heated conversations. We have a lot of important conversations. I'm not always sure that we have productive conversations. So let's do our best to make sure that today we have a productive conversation. Right now, the jury is deliberating in the FTX trial for Mr. Sam Bankman-Fried, or should I say, Mr. Sam Bankman-Fried's trial for fraud and other counts with regard to his handling being chief executive at FTX. Now, I think most of us know the story of what happened. Obviously, there was a lot of innovation, but there was a lot of, some would say, deliberate and dishonest risk-taking. Again, I am not a chronicler of FTX, and I can only speak to what I've been able to glean, and I am certain that what I've been able to glean is not the totality of what's in the public domain, and it's definitely not the totality of what actually happened. What I find interesting in this entire thing with regard to Mr. Bankman-Fried was that he actually decided to take the witness stand. Most times, you don't see persons take the witness stand in these kinds of trials, particularly when you have had co-defendants who would have already pled guilty and have, as we would say in this context, turned crown, or in the U.S. context, they become state or federal witnesses, right? Mr. Bankman-Fried had that happen to him. Number of his former colleagues, and think about this, we have to realize that all of these people that would have either, that are either currently on trial or would have been pled guilty or, sorry, that would have pled guilty or would have been found guilty, yes, literally a little over, what was that, 24 months or 24 months ago, these folk were literally right down the road here in Nassau, in Albany. They were right there doing all kinds of things we are now finding out. But they were doing this stuff that has impacted billions of dollars of other people's money from right there in Albany. Right there. That to me is extremely fascinating. It's fascinating to me that this guy has made a decision to go to the witness stand and to mention any number of things. And if you were watching any of the trial or following any of the trial, you'll see that there was an attempt for, I guess, to try to tie Mr. Bankman-Fried and his behavior to some kind of malfeasance or misfeasance on the part of the government with some of the line of questioning, right? I don't know that any of that, based on what I was able to ascertain, really seemed to stick. But nonetheless, there was an attempt. I think as we look at this, one of the things that I want us to consider is how and why essentially this, what in a lot of respects was a, unfortunately turned out to be a flash in the pan, right? Why is it that we got so excited over that innovation or that kind of thing, but we don't get excited and try to build companies and support companies? And full disclaimer, I run a financial services firm. We have a mobile wallet. We're in the space locally where most of the innovation is happening, right? So, full disclaimer. But I find it fascinating that there is so much energy. There was so much energy and attention when FTX was still extant, before they had to declare bankruptcy. The amount of energy and effort in this town that people had pushed, and yes, I understand people like new and flashy, and these guys are buying up a bunch of real estate. But substantively, I don't know that, and I think it's pretty much proven that he was not running a better business in terms of actual management of methodical business day-to-day processes than the folk in what we would call the innovative spaces around money services, mobile wallets, and so forth. So you literally have a situation where this guy got all that attention, and apparently a lot of Bahamians invested there. right? And something that they had very limited understanding in. I find it fascinating that there was so much energy and excitement around something like that from somebody who just reached. But I'm just making an observation. When there is innovation that is essentially world class, and the reason why I can say it's world class, because there are companies reaching out to us Bahamian companies that have developed our platforms, who want to utilize our platforms in their market. So obviously we're doing something right. I just find it fascinating and curious that we don't have that same level of energy for things that we can do in the Bahamas. And this is why I go back to this whole conversation around tourism. Why do we not have an excitement? I don't hear any real excitement among Bahamians based on the Minister of Tourism, Deputy Prime Minister, made that comment in Parliament. I don't see a level of excitement and energy around the fact that there are more people coming to the Bahamas than ever before. We should be excited about that. But we can only be excited about that if we are thinking around how we as Bahamians are going to provide value that people are prepared to pay for. And it appears to me, based on the lack of excitement, that one, we don't recognize when values are being provided, and two, it seems as though we're not prepared to put in the work to provide more value. And that's a generalization. But I'm simply saying the mood around this town in Nassau in particular, I haven't been to the Family Islands to gauge what the response is, but I'm very disappointed, for lack of a better term. Isn't more interest, more excitement among Bahamians about the possibilities of what we can do as a people and what we can do together to build this economy and to grow this economy. I am disappointed. And I won't hide that. But I'm also hopeful because I believe that this is the best place in the world that God made to live and work. I hope that it soon also becomes the best place to do business. In many ways, it's not. And I can understand how that dampens enthusiasm. And I'm hopeful that our leaders who have the responsibility to create an environment that Bahamians find conducive to building businesses and starting new businesses, I'm hopeful that they take it upon themselves to do more and more every day to make sure that it becomes a much more conducive environment to Bahamian ownership and innovation. And I'm bullish on the potential of the Bahamian people. I don't think that there's a more creative set of people in the world. And people will say, oh, Bahamians don't necessarily create new things from scratch. And I say, you could say that all day to me. One thing I could tell you, a Bahamian can take something and put their own twist on it in a way that you would have never thought about. So yeah, we might not make something from scratch in a way that somebody else thinks about it. But one thing I can tell you, once a Bahamian learns it and understands it, we know how to put our twist on it. And the beautiful thing about it is our twist, much the kind of twist that people all around the world will come to appreciate. That's the way that we are as a people. Our innovation is the ability to bring what I would call a innovation that does not necessarily, even if it doesn't create new, and I think it's a misconception that Bahamians will always create new. But even if we don't always create new, that which we take, we transform into something that is unique. It's newly unique. And I think that that's something that we have to play into. Internationally, I will tell you that looking around us, separate and apart from what's happening with Mr. Bankman-Fried and its impact, potentially, or non-impact, somewhere I hear Stevie S singing JSR every time I listen to Mr. Bankman-Fried's testimony on, I saw the cross-examination, literally Stevie S song JSR came to my mind. Again, I don't know what the jury outcome is going to be, but for whatever reason, that song just came to my mind. I will definitely say that there are a lot of conversations that are happening locally and internationally around the conflict in Israel, right? The Gaza Strip conflict is something that is unfortunate, both from the fact that it was such a that was taken by Hamas, but it is also unfortunate based on the aggressive response that Israel has taken. I think the entire situation, for those of us that are students of history, is unfortunate for both the Israeli people and the Palestinian people. Because there is a thought, at least I think internationally, all of us that are students of history would say that, you know what? The most sensible, rational thing is for there to be a two-state solution. I think the problem is that a lot of people don't understand history, and there is an expectation or there is some thought process that Israel has precluded a two-state solution. If you actually know your history, the reality is what is happening today and what has happened under the current leadership of the Israeli government is one thing, right? I think I'm very careful to get very entangled into the politics of other folk, but suffice it to say, I think the reporting of the last couple of weeks has unearthed the fact that Mr. Netanyahu probably was not the biggest fan of a two-state solution, and on his side has been what I would call a reflection of some of the, what we would call, unwillingness by Hamas and others on the party push towards a two-state solution. So I think Mr. Netanyahu, in that regard, history and the Israeli people will judge him accordingly. And I think that the day of reckoning with him, with the Israeli population, both for what they consider to be a major security lapse, but also his entire approach to governance, I think the day of reckoning is probably coming very soon. Again, simply being a student of history and of current affairs, when you read the editorials and the opinion pieces of persons who are in Israel and of Israeli descent overseas, but are involved in what's happening in Israel and connected to it, I think that there will be some interesting things that happen in Israel, in their political order. But this issue of what's happening around, not around, but in Israel and the Gaza Strip, and by extension, the West Bank, is something that, in a lot of respects, forces us to think about how nations are formed and how nations are maintained, or at least that's what it does to me. There's a lot of historical conversation around why the Palestinian cause is justified and why the Israeli cause is justified. The reality is that there there are settlers on both sides, or there were settlers, or what we would call persons on both sides of that equation of Israeli ancestry, Arab ancestry, Arab Palestinian ancestry that occupied that land. And there have been various agreements. People talk about the Balfour Declaration and all of these different things. But again, if you know the entire history of that region, there are a lot of things that happen. What's happening today is the result of lots of poor decisions and poor actions on both sides. And as we think even around what's going on in our own nation, we have to be very, very careful when we talk about diaspora issues and who feels they have a claim to what here in the bounds. Because I am not prepared under any circumstances for there to be unnecessary civil unrest in our country because of people having some confused notion around what the Bahamas is and what it represents. I think we need to be very mindful that we respect people and we respect due process so that people are treated fairly and every consideration. But once determinations are made in regard to comprehensive policy, not policy that is knee-jerk or reactionary, but policy that thinks about externalities, what they call unintended consequences, right? I don't know that we always think that part of our policy through. We try to, whatever the current sentiment is sometimes, or we try to match what the political winds are. But to me, that is not effective leadership. There has to be principled leadership. So from my perspective, we have to do a better job of being thoughtful around what it is that we want for this country and the impact that that has in our industries like tourism, like financial services. But it also has to be considerate, or it has to consider what is it that we want for our country with regard to our labor force, with regard to our comprehensive immigration strategy. Because immigration for us needs to be strategic. Where are we trying to go as a country? What skills do we need? How are we training and building those skills up among our local population? And where there are shortfalls and where we estimate there will continue to be shortfalls until such a time as we can build up that capacity, how are we making sure that we attract that skill set? But not that we simply attract the skill set. How do we screen to make sure that when the skills come, the beliefs, or not even necessarily beliefs, but the attitudes and the what I would call willingness to interact and to integrate in the society is appropriate? Because one of the things that we don't job of, and we've not had a real conversation about, is the fact that there are a lot of people who are here and they've been here for years and years, but they have not integrated. A lot of that is by choice, but we also have to consider whether or not a lot of that is by necessity, because there is what I would call a level of xenophobia. And a lot of you will say, well, you love the Bahamas, but you're saying that you're not xenophobic. I'm not. I love the Bahamas. I love and respect our laws, and they should be followed. I'm not prepared for anybody, foreign or local, to break our laws. But that does not mean that I dislike people from other places, because I don't. But what I do when I travel is I appreciate the privilege of being allowed into other countries. And people have to appreciate the privilege of being allowed to be here. So one of the things we have to think about and talk through, again, I go back to is, how do we deal with immigration comprehensively? How do we deal with our society and where we want to be comprehensively? One of the things that has happened in the situation, I believe, in Gaza is, there is on both sides at the leadership level an unwillingness to consider how that situation is dealt with comprehensively. There appeared to be an approach that said stalemate is sufficient. Mind you, there are arguments on both sides. They say that the Israelis are running an apartheid state. That is an ethnic, what you would call an ethnic class system. There are other people who will tell you that the Israelis are literally a democratic people living under a terrorist shadow, and that the steps that they have taken are absolutely necessary to be able to maintain a stable society and economy, particularly when you have Hamas launching, and it is fact that Hamas launches rockets into Israel regularly. Like, this is a part of their program. There are lots of things that are what we would call hard questions. And as Bahamians get, we would call, more exposed to things that are happening in the world, I want us to be very careful that we don't take simplistic thoughts or the simplistic dogmatic positions that are not well considered. Because the reality is, there are many things that led to the situation in Gaza. Just as one caller indicated, there are many things that led to where we are right now with this whole situation around Shantytown demolition and so forth. And as we consider, again, what's happening, humans are humans everywhere. I tell people that all the time. We have to be very mindful that we take the lessons that we can learn from other places and other situations, and in a contextually appropriate way, apply them in our own situation. One of the things I want us to be mindful of is that we plan and that we are deliberate around how we achieve comprehensive immigration reform. Yes, the situation in Gaza is different. It's a violent situation. Some people would call it an uprising. Other people would call it a liberation movement. Other people will tell you that it is literally a terror situation that the Israelis are in. Everybody has a fit. The fact remains, there are no good answers. And we have to make sure that in our situation, we don't get to a place where there are no good answers, because we haven't taken the time to action in the best interest of our future. This is Z Live. Carlos Mackey sitting in for Chicago Night. We'll be back right after this quick break.
Wherever you are in the world, Cleveland Clinic's world-class care is here for you. From Ohio to Florida to London, Cleveland Clinic treats thousands of patients every year, ranked number 2 in the world by Newsweek. You can trust our caregivers to enhance your experience across each step of your treatment journey. For every care in the world, learn more at clevelandclinic.org/Caribbean.
Too many debt bills? Overdue on loan payments? Improve your credit score and credit report with the Bahamas Credit Bureau. Shrink your debt payments with a debt consolidation loan and built-in savings that pays you 5% interest. Call 356-7764.
The Grand Bahama News is available every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian. Buy your local paper at Freeport convenience stores, Western Bakery, DeGregory's Fine Foods, and Bellevue Gifts. Want to reach your Grand Bahama customers? Then call Barefoot Marketing at 827-4578 or message them for ad rates via their Facebook page. Advertising opportunities now include classified ads too. Keep up with all the latest Grand Bahama news in the Nassau Guardian newspaper every Tuesday.
It's World Investor Month, and today we're tackling a common problem, inflation. Inflation makes your money worth less over time. So how do you combat it? Think of investing as your shield. By putting your money in investments that typically grow faster than inflation, like stocks or real estate, this message is brought to you by RF Bank and Trust and the Bahamas International Securities Exchange. Stay informed by following us on social media.
Girl, you see how Cora eye look funny all black up yesterday?
But she say she bump into a wall when she's running after the churn them.
Yeah, but last Saturday you see her arm was all black and blue, right?
What you saying? You think something wrong between her and Jack?
I ain't sure, but you know Jack is a jealous man. I hear him and Cora last Friday. I hear him say he hear Cora have eyes for Junior.
Now you know that ain't true. Cora is a good woman. Does mind her business, take care of them churn and go to church every Sunday. So what you think we should do?
I think we should report Jack, you know. Cora don't say nothing, but silence hides violence. And we don't want to line up in the cemetery.
Not me. I ain't getting in nobody business. Then Jack come after me and I line up next to Cora.
No, man, we could call a text Crime Stopper. And remember, we can even get some grocery money for our tip.
Remind me again how this work.
We can call them in Miami at 328-TIPS or 328-8477. Or when we in the island, call toll free at 300-TIPS or 300-8477. And if you don't have no minutes, use the Crack Crime Bahamas app and we could text them and the messages get all mix up before it leave your phone. So no, nobody can know what you're saying.
So what are we waiting on then? Let's go earn some grocery money.
Join Bishop Henry Fernandez, Shirley Caesar, and Jonathan Nelson for the Becoming My Best Self Conference on November 2nd to the 4th at the Baja Mar Hotel. You do not want to miss these 3 days of anointed music, worship, and the Word. Get your tickets now. For one price, you can worship with Shirley Caesar and Jonathan Nelson and participate in every session for the entire weekend. Register now at henryfernandez.org or purchase your tickets at Suntime Marathon Mall, the Galleria entrance. Contact 242-601-2012 for more info. Seats are limited. It's time to level up at the Becoming Your Best Self Conference. Meet us there.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Good day, everyone. We're back to wrap up this edition of Z Live. Again, this was an open line Thursday, and we're extremely thankful for this beautiful gray and windy day that we've been given. We are extremely thankful to Mr. Lang for allowing us this opportunity. I'm extremely happy anytime I can come and be a part of the conversation with you, the listening audience. We had an opportunity to discuss a number of things today. One of the things I'm surprised that nobody called about was the PLP convention and the by-election that is happening in Bimini and West End. I'm very surprised that nobody had any comments on that today. I think that's a fascinating situation. I'm always surprised by the amount of political aspirants that appear every time there seems to be an opening or an opportunity in our country. It really is interesting to see the amount of people, particularly on the PLP side, that would have in as we look at what is happening. We see, interestingly, that there's a third party candidate who is essentially offering himself for that constituency, obviously with a very different, unorthodox approach to that election or by-election. So again, the Bahamas is a place of innovation. It's an interesting place. PLP convention apparently is going to be upcoming soon. And I'm, you know, wondering how much of an impact the occurrences of the last month plus have had on what will occur at the convention. I think it's going to be a very interesting convention. I think one of the things that I'll be interested to hear about is what the party's plans are for the second half of its, and I can't even call it the second half, but I guess 2 years in, you might as well do it. But the second half of their term, looking at what's happening around the world, even as we consider leaders, right? It's a fascinating study when we look at the whole situation in Gaza, even, that, you know, Netanyahu has been around for a very long time, right? We have somebody like him who is in no way a political neophyte. As a matter of fact, is literally, you know, I don't want to call him in any way. And you have to be careful because he is obviously a man who is old enough to be my father, but somebody born in 1949, right? It's a long time ago. So he's over 70 years old, based on my math. And you have, on the other side, who is supposed to be the titular leader of the Palestinian Authority, his nom de guerre is Abu Mazen, but the head of the PLA, right? The Palestinian Liberation Authority, is literally now over 80 years old, right? So you have a situation where there appears to be age group of people that are making very significant decisions for a future that they may not be around in. Even when you look at what's happening in the United States, Joe Biden next year running for president is potentially going to be the oldest president in U.S. history. Donald Trump, if he is able to clear his legal hurdles, will not be very far behind him. I wonder, interestingly, what kind of inflections and what kind of lessons we can learn in our country around having persons at this stage, in this critical juncture in history, make all the decisions for a future that they very likely may not be around to necessarily feel the impacts and to answer for, if necessary, their decisions. Just a thought. Again, thank you so much for being here with us today on Seed Live. We appreciate this opportunity. And remember, the Bahamas is and must be the very best place for people to live, work, do business, essentially the very best place on earth to visit, the very best place on earth to simply be. But we can't just talk about it. We have to be about it. God bless you all. Again, thank you to Shivago. Take care, and God bless the Bahamas.
Rich Chivago Line is brought to you by Burger King, the Cleveland Clinic, Faith Center Ministries, Grand Bahama News, RF Bank and Trust, and Wall Star Assurance.